Welcome to our newest adventure for first responder wellness. No one fights alone. In-depth conversations about mental health and culture in the first responder space. We're joined by your co-hosts, Austin Pedersen and Brad Shepard.
Hey, welcome back to the No One Fights Alone podcast. Austin is got other things going on today, so it's just me today, and I am super excited about having our guest on today, Scott Medlin of the 10 Code Mindset. Scott, welcome to the podcast, man.
Thank you, Brad. I'm really thrilled to be here and talking to you again. It's been a while, so I'm glad we were able to reconnect.
It has been. So you and I connected years ago before I had my life fall apart, and actually we were catching up a little bit on that, and I'm super excited about having you on here, man. So your background, I want you to go into it a little bit more, but just for our listeners, Marine Corps, police officer, five-time author, and now national presenter in this space, which I know you're going to talk about, but wow, that's quite a bio, dude.
Well, I appreciate it. Let's see, this all started in 2001 when I started in the year 2000. I signed the dotted line when I was 17 years old to join the Marines, and graduated high school May of 2001. And I know some people are laughing at that date, but anyway, early June of 2001, and I'm talking not even a week later, bam,
you were already in
right down to Paris Island. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Right down to Paris Island.
Impeccable timing.
June, July, and August, just perfect time to be down there. And anyway, what's amazing though is after I made it through boot camp, took my 10 days of boot camp leave, my first day reporting in for combat training as an official Marine was September 11th, 2001. So needless to say, the whole mentality changed for the military. And fast forward, I was throughout my time in the Marines, I was deployed twice for Operation Iraqi Freedom. And I was just a reservist. I was going to go through college and then work my way up through the officer candidate school to then get commissioned after college. But no, I got deployed twice. It took me 6 years to get through a 4-year program in college. and I met this beautiful young lady, and she's now my wife. And she was like, hey, they're talking about sending you back a third time. I can't handle a deployment. And I was like, yeah, I'll get out and pursue law enforcement. So onward to law enforcement from 2007 to 2022. And there's a lot to cover in there if you want to.
Well, I think,
I think this
is a great segue. Why don't we just dive in? I mean, you've kind of piqued our interest. Let's just dive into your story. Just take us on a journey here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, look, I had wanted to work in law enforcement for a long time. I mean, you know how it is. You get, some people call it, you got the bug, you felt the calling, you got the itch, and you need to scratch. however you phrase it. Basically, I grew up seeing the police officers respond to things just randomly through the city I lived. And I always just felt like when they were there, we were safer. And there were a few times where I saw my parents call 911 to get the police to respond. And I just remember thinking, like, I want them to show up and I want them to help us out. I want them to keep us safe. And after becoming a teenager or during my teenage years, I watched that TV show Cops, mm-hmm. and World Wildest Police Chases and all
bad
that, or
boys,
World
bad
Wildest
boys.
Police videos. Right. I just felt drawn to it. And finally at 15 years old, I was at a high school career fair and I walked up to the recruiter of the police department, and it was like God slapped me in the back of the head and said, this is what you're going to do. Yep. And there was no going back. So in 2007, it all became a reality after getting out of the rookie school. And worked patrol, canine, SRO, and then finished out as just a part-time officer at a campus at a small university. But quite a career, and I'm grateful for it.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, let's start in on your let's back up and start in a little bit on your military career, because I know you have a lot, and maybe just take us on your, tell us your story. Just what's the message you got for us today?
I think looking back on my time in the Marines, not only did I learn the power of self-discipline, that the Marines really pushed that into me. It also taught me about the fact you're going to have to do a lot of hard things if you want to get what you want to get in life. And that's just, there's no way around that. So stop running from pain. You need to run towards it. Go through the things that bring, that are considered, you know, quote, pain. Like, I mean, heck, just showing up regularly to exercise, stuff like that. It's a short-term pain, but it equals long-term reward. Yeah. And I do go into that in my presentations, how it's too easy to fall for things that are very easy and they give you a quick, right, you know, a quick sense of pleasure, but they'll lead to that long-term pain, to which a lot of people know about, but are we truly acting upon it? But that's what the Marines really taught me about. But it was also a big spiritual journey. I mean, I was deployed to war. So I'm leaving my family. I don't know if I'm going to come home alive. It's all these things running through my head, and I can feel the enemy pulling me in from time to time, just saying, oh, you need to worry about this. You need to be worried about that. And that's not good. So it was a spiritual journey as well. But it was a fortunate thing in 2005 where I survived a close mortar fire incident. And to this day, I have a friend who's still in the Marines, actually. He was in the front of the convoy. Me and the Marines I was with, we were in the back. And I was in the radio vehicle because I was a radio operator. We made a turn on this road, and it was supposed to be a, quote, routine convoy. You know, those routine convoys, routine traffic stops. This ended up being anything but routine, where these mortar fire, the mortars just came closing in on us. And I was legitimately getting scared, and it was that whole life flashing before your eyes thing. And a friend of mine, like I said, this friend of mine, he still to this day is like, I don't know how you guys survived that one. But I remember just praying about it during the situation, and I didn't feel alone. But also, unfortunately, after that incident, it just played on repeat in my head. Mm-hmm. And fast forward a few months, we get home. I say we because I was over there at the same time my brother was. So he and I were in the same unit deployed together. So yeah, it was pretty interesting. I had family over there. But anyway, get home. And for a year after the deployment, I am taking the perspective of people can't understand what I went through and what other Marines and soldiers and airmen and sailors went through. I thought I was fine. I thought everybody else had the problem and a bad attitude looking at us because I was go, go, go. Like I could not sit still. I mean, I was happy to be around at times and stuff like that, but it's just, I could not sit still. And unfortunately, my parents, my youngest brother, they got the wrath of the negativity and the irritability because what I was going through was symptoms of post-traumatic stress. But I thought, well, eventually it turned into flashbacks and anxiety. Because every day I was having this movie play over and over again in my head. But I thought it would go away with time. Right. A year after the deployment, my dad said, I'm losing you and I'm not going to lose my family. You need to get some help. And here I have someone who can help you. And that is when it hit me like, okay, there's something going on here. But that was back in 2006. Post-traumatic stress disorder was not talked about a lot in the military. It was not talked about a lot in general. So it was something for me to learn about. And I thought, well, how the heck have I got this? I didn't go through the worst of a combat deployment like some other people did. What in the world? And I felt a little bit guilty about it. But either way, I got treated through neurolinguistic programming and absolutely changed my life, where I was able to step away from reliving the incident and instead think about it third person, which in turn helped me to not experience the emotions over and over again that came with the incident when it actually occurred.
Wow. So you can credit, circling back a little bit, you can credit your dad coming in and saying, yeah, you got something going on. Let's look in the mirror for a minute.
Yeah.
Talk more about that. Yeah, how that conversation went. And were you embracing it, or were you resistant to it, or were you kind of giving him the finger? Were you know,
no, I, if I'd have given him the finger, I don't think I'd have the finger now, but
well, I mean, theoretically in your mind, I know you're.
No, I get it. Yeah, yeah. There had been resistance leading up to that conversation where we were just arguing as a family a lot. Yeah. Like when my brother and I were, when there were family get togethers, we were just irritable.
Yeah. And did your brother share this? Did your brother?
Yeah, he had to go through the same thing, and he's on record talking about it. So I'm not disclosing anything the public doesn't know, but we just didn't know what was going on. We would get so, like, if I check the news and you know, the news, it's not portraying exactly what was going on over there and what we were going through. It just made me so mad. And I was taking it out on people. Anyway, so there was resistance leading up to that. But when he said, "I'm losing you," like that in my mind was a non-negotiable. Yeah. Like, Scott, get out of your own way. Stop it with the excuses. Yeah. You're not fine. PTSD can be very sneaky. It can be very sneaky. And it got the best of me a lot in many situations. It resonated when he said that.
I share that. And I 100% see it myself. And it snuck back up on me.
We still have to get, it's like one of those where not everyone can be cured of it, but you can definitely manage it as long as you stay on your game.
So when your dad talked to you about this, did you like, well, let's peel back even further. Did you even know what he was talking about? Or did you know, like, hey, I think something's going on here, or I definitely have PTSD.
Yeah.
You know,
I didn't know it was PTSD. Yeah. I just knew that something was not right where I kept having nightmares. Yeah. I kept, and at one point I totally phased out during a summer school course in history. I was in class, and the next thing you know, I'm thinking about the mortar fire incident. And all of a sudden I look at the professor and I'm like, wait a minute, what did he just talk about? I wasn't on the floor crawling around like I was taking incoming fire, but I mentally went 100% back to that incident.
Checked out.
100%. Yeah. So I went to the school counseling center and I said, something's not right here. And she said, you had a legit flashback. So I knew about that. The sleeping, I kept having nightmares. And then the relationships were falling apart with my mom, my dad, and my youngest brother. And yeah, so when he said that, I was like, okay, there is something here. But we just didn't know what it was.
Right. And you were married at the time?
No, I was dating now wife, but she was my girlfriend
at
the time.
How was she, do you mind me asking, and how she was kind of seeing and what her reactions were to some of this?
We were still in the new dating phase and all that, where I was just so happy to be around her. I didn't bring my personal baggage.
We're showing our best, putting our best front on, right?
Yeah,
nothing going on here. Nothing to see here.
right. I'll just take it out on my family.
Yeah.
she made me so happy, and she still does to this day.
Yeah.
We can get into that later with how the law enforcement career went. We were just dating. So it was mainly my mom and dad and youngest brother that were taking the brunt of it.
Maybe for our listeners, if you don't mind me exploring a little more about what you were experiencing. I love the story and the word picture you just painted about being in class, because some of our listeners may have similar things going on. So were there any other type of occurrences like that, or maybe just aha moments? You're like, man, I'm off. This something is just off. Did you have any other things that maybe the listeners it'd be helpful to them?
Absolutely. And when I speak about this, there are certain signs and symptoms we have to be aware of. And I don't tell them in a way for someone to memorize a whole list. Why would I do that? That's very boring. I present it in a way where you can self-assess and be like, oh my gosh, I'm going through that. There might be something to this. And I was going through avoidance behavior as well. I would avoid certain situations, certain people, certain places that would remind me of Iraq and trigger emotions. And I thought that was a healthy way to cope. Little did I know it didn't release anything. It was just, I was just burying it through avoidance behaviors, particularly for some reason, crowds. I did not like to go to the mall, to Walmart on a Saturday afternoon when everybody and their brother was there. I had to be mindful of that. So I would go in the morning. When the doctor brought it up to me, he was like, that's avoidance behaviors. Yeah. It's not a long-term coping mechanism at all. And I was like, oh shoot. So there was
by
that.
The way,
there
was that's also unhealthy. That's what the doc said. By the way, that's unhealthy.
Basically, yeah. He said, just because you're avoiding it doesn't mean the problem just went away. But also, now this is for, if there's any veterans listening, particularly Iraq, Afghanistan vets, the improvised explosive devices, they were an obvious threat on the roads we traveled. Right. I still, to this day, if I see a piece of trash on the side of the road, my mind goes there. Like, is that going to explode? Right. Now I have to tell myself, I am here. I am not there. You can release that tension. Right. but that was something that was going through my mind. And I remember a friend of mine who was stationed in a different place in Iraq. But after Iraq, we started talking about some of the symptoms that we were facing. And he said that sometimes he would find himself driving down the middle of the road just to feel safe. Now, obviously, that's not good. He'd be pulled over in a heartbeat for that. Right. So stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, thanks for letting me back up here a little bit. Okay, so you, Dad says, hey, go get help. And what's next there on that cusp? But you go find somebody randomly, make that person listen to your.
He actually had a good friend who knew a doctor who had treated the friend. So the we go to this doctor who was recommended, and you know, I wrote about this in my last book, The Power in Showing Up. We get, my brother and I go to this doctor's house because he works out of his basement, which we're already like, we're going to a house. So then he comes out in the jeans and these big suspenders with this plaid shirt.
Oh, my word.
And he says, Marines, what's up, Marines? Semper Fi. I'm like, what in the world is going on here? So
what just happened?
Yeah. So anyway, I'm like, we're at the right place, but is this a good idea?
Oh, my word.
But he ended up being one of the most genuine, caring, knowledgeable, nice people I've ever met. And still to this day, we're in touch. Sorry if my 8-month-old daughter is making
a lot of
background noise.
I love it. She's unhappy about something.
Yeah, they'll be out of the house soon. But anyway, he sat with me and my brother 2 hours each and listened to us. But then he started his treatment of neurolinguistic program, where basically before that it was talk therapy, you know, talk about the situation. How do you feel about it? It wasn't working. That's what was going on at the counseling center at school, to which I'm not knocking those psychologists. They were doing what they were doing. And, anyway, this was just a different form of treatment. He said, now this is what he had me do, because he knew I was a believer. He said, I want you to picture yourself going through that close mortar fire incident. I said, well, I picture it every day. He said, no. He said, I want you to see yourself in that situation, not be in the situation. So I had to step out mentally and see myself in it. He said, now, where do you see it? And basically I pointed him, I showed in my mind where I saw it. And then he kind of made me break away from the thinking about it. And we started talking hunting and guns and stuff like that. And little did I know, he was having me just relax a little bit more, because he could tell it was intense. So then he said, I want you to picture Jesus. I said, oh, okay. He said, well, where do you see him? I said, well, front and center in my mind. And he goes, all right. He said, be there with him. So I picture myself with Jesus. And then he says, now take that incident, bring it over to Jesus, have Jesus take it. And always see yourself in that situation, not be in that situation. Basically, through this whole 2 hours, I was able to detach emotionally from the incident. And I wasn't thinking about it first person anymore. I was thinking about it third person, which, like I said, detached the emotion away from it. So I was not reliving it. It was strictly a memory at that point, not a relived experience. Right. And I hope that makes sense. I'm no doctor, but it was an incredible form of treatment.
Wow. So in 2 hours, he was able to detach the emotional impact of that event. And we talk a lot about EMDR and ART, but this mm-hmm. Sounds like something very similar. I'm not familiar with neuro-linguistic therapy, but that sounds like something very similar to what that experience is. Is that fair?
Yes, it is. And yeah, the flashback stopped, mm-hmm. the nightmares stopped, but unfortunately, I do get dreams every now and then where I'm back on deployment. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to be here. And there's mortar fires coming in, but I wake up and I'm able to say, I'm here, I'm safe. You know, I'm not
right
in war before all the emotions, right. I would just feed into them. I don't do that anymore, but it is something where I still have to manage and, sure. and you know, when I need to, I check in for an oil change, that kind of sure. thing and get the treatment. But for the most part, so many of the symptoms that I was experiencing just dropped dramatically. I was amazed.
Incredibly powerful from a guy in suspenders.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And if he hears this interview, yeah. he's gonna laugh his butt off.
Hey, shout out to the guy, the superpower guy in the suspenders.
Yep.
So let's just kind of keep going with that. So how did you, when you walked out of there, did you like have this, what were you experiencing when you walked out? Did you have that aha moment, or did it take a while for it to really sink in?
I think it just took a few weeks to realize I wasn't having flashbacks. I wasn't thinking about it every day. I was thinking about Iraq every day, but not the incident every day. And then relationships with my parents started getting a heck of a lot right. better. And I was able to slow yeah. down a little bit in life, right. Or mentally, you know, so it helped. It did.
I know me personally, it, in some of those moments, it feels like you kind of have a real tunnel vision. And then when you have this space, or this, you know, you work the, for me, when I work my recovery in that, I have a broader perspective. I see clear, I see further out, I see, you know, mm-hmm. peripherally more. But when you're in this, you know, really negative space, it seems to really tunnel in to just, I can only do what's right in front of me, you know? And is that fair to say when you walked out, you just like, maybe I have been a dick for a while, you know that?
Right. Yeah. No, 100%. And I encourage first responders, veterans, yeah. be careful about yeah. this stuff, because eventually you just attach an identity to this kind of, these ailments, these symptoms. Right. And they, I'm not going to say they give you a good meaning and a purpose, right. but you get so attached to it, and that you convince yourself that that's who you are. And it doesn't have to be that way at all. Right. And yes, it takes work to rise above, but you definitely can. Our mind is like a muscle, like our biceps and our triceps. You can work it out and get strong.
I say the same thing. Yeah. And matter of fact, there's a presenter, his name's Tim up, and you may have even met him up in Cattaraugus County, New York. We've had him on the podcast before, and thematically, one of the things he continually talks about is that PTSD is a manageable diagnosis, and you yeah. know, this, you got to work at it though. You know, going back to what you originally mm-hmm. said, life is hard, pain is coming. What are you going to do? Are you going to be disciplined enough to, you know, proactively work on what's coming at you? So I you know, great message, mm-hmm. Scott. Great message. Okay, so from there, what? We walk out, we've done a little bit of neuro-linguistic therapy, and yep. we're looking better, and where does life go from there?
Yeah, we're finishing up last year of college, and then still dating my now wife, and having a blast the last year in college, because I joke around, I had something to relate it to. I mean, people were stressed out at college. I was like, I just went to Iraq and survived. I'm good. This is the great life. So anyway, graduated college, and I said, it is onward towards law enforcement. So in July of 2007, got hired by my hometown department, which I had dreamed of working mm-hmm. for years. Yep. And it was a dream come true. And I got done in the rookie school in December of 2007. And I mean, I was sworn at the graduation, but right before graduation. So I was able to walk across the stage as sworn police officer at the rookie school.
Love that for you. Love that for you. So, mm-hmm. so police officer career takes off. You're doing great. Hitting all the streets.
I hit a roadblock after my first year, surprisingly. Oh my gosh, big mistake that I speak on to this day. I got in with a group of negative officers. They negatively influenced me, and I made a bad negative decision because of it. I actually left my hometown police department, went to a smaller department just after a year. And I was working at that small town department. It was a good place, but 3 months into it, I thought, crap, I made a mistake. Yeah. I mean, I realized I had run away from a negative emotion rather than pursue another opportunity. Yeah. And it bit me right in the butt. So I begged and begged to come back. And they chewed me out on an oral board for 90 minutes. I probably still hold the record for the longest oral board at that department.
Grilled you.
They did. And I owned every mistake I made on the way out. I did not leave on good terms. Yeah. And they didn't ask me who exactly the negative crowd was, but they said, are you going to listen to them again? And I said, no. Oh gosh, no. So when I came back 8 months later, for the rest of my career, I was very mindful of not getting sucked into the negativity. Now, am I saying I never complained, never got up in the gossip? Oh, heck no, we're human, but I didn't let it become my mentality to just actively find what was wrong or what was negative and focus on it.
Do you mind if I ask some questions about that? Because this is actually a part of our culture that I don't think we've ever talked about on the podcast. Listen, this is a, not just your agency, but this permeates all across the first responder culture. I've never been a veteran, so I don't know, but I've heard that it exists there as well. There's a minute population that is just a hot stirring negative bunch of people. And is that fair? Mm-hmm. Did I describe it pretty close to what?
Yeah, my wife works in corporate America. She deals with some negative people. It's no matter what industry you're in, it's negative. I think with law enforcement, it's first responder work in general, it can just get really bad because you're already exposed to enough negativity outside of the four walls. And then if you don't have good active coping mechanisms in place and lifestyle mentality, then you can bring it in. And I'm not blaming the job. I mean, if someone's negative, they're negative. Sure. But I think it just can be a heck of a lot worse considering the profession. Right. And unfortunately, I get it. There's some very toxic managers out there, and they will drain you, like the micromanagers as well. They will be draining on you. But and you might be a victim of that, but we have to learn more about not staying in victimhood and strengthening our mindset, because your attitude and your way of looking at things can really shape how you become on the inside. Right. Thus you look at things differently that are going on the outside. And unfortunately, if someone's going to focus on nothing but negative, they're just going to continue to bring more about it. And there is that crowd, and misery loves company. And I'll give credit where credit is due anytime. Stephanie Kiso wrote in her book, Work Aside, she's a former law enforcement officer. She said that negative gossip and negative talk is actually a form of someone trying to just find a way to naturally connect with people. So it's easier to talk negative rather than to have harder conversations to connect with people. So that kind of thing. Now we got to be careful of this stuff for sure.
Well, we've had many podcasts that talk about the toxic manager, the toxic commander, the toxic executive leadership, but we have not had many that I can remember. I don't remember having a conversation about ground level toxicity, and I think this is a great opportunity to maybe do a little bit of working through it. And I love that viewpoint of you're looking for connection I'm going to put words in your mouth. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. Sorry. But you're really filling a void there in support of this victim mentality. I've been hurt. I've been wronged. I've been maybe even betrayed or maybe even righteously disciplined, but you didn't like it. You know,
or the mentality of I'll be happy when I'll be happy when they raise my pay. I'll be happier when I get a new patrol car. I'll be happier when I'm on a new unit. I'll be happier when I fell for that one in particular. And I would talk to people about that and they go, oh yeah, I totally agree. Sure. But it's like, once the newness of the brand new patrol car wore off, right. Guess what? I was complaining about something else. It's just,
but, some of that is we feel like we deserve, right? We deserve more than, and I see this a lot, Scott, in much more aged or tenured first responders, to where they say, you know, I've given 15 years, I've given 18 years, I've given 22 years to this department, and this is all I get. And I mean, I kind of do an asshole move with them, but I'm like, did you get a paycheck? I mean, let's foundationally talk. Signed up for, signed up to do this and then receive a paycheck for it, which is what you did. And somewhere along the line, we buy into some bullshit of skewing what we think we deserve. And this is my perspective and my experience of doing this a long time. So consequently, we enter into this rabbit hole of I'm a victim, I deserve something, an entitlement of I've been wronged. And those people tend to gravitate together. They tend to they find each other. And they become a really toxic and a formidable opponent to a department or an agency. Is that fair?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And we have to understand, as human beings, our brains haven't changed from our ancestors years ago. And you know this, and I'm sure many other people listening know this, because psychologists and neuro experts talk about it all the time, that our brain is innately wired to seek out the negative.
Yeah.
So we have to make a choice to focus on something that's not negative, or else you will just continue to get consumed by it.
Right.
And it is toxic, and it's very bad. You have to be very mindful of it. See, it's like police officers in particular, man, you talk about complacency out there. It'll get you killed and it'll get you hurt. Well, look, coming from like within your mindset, your health, if you're not vigilant with that, and you're not looking for the risks that can affect you internally, that's bad. That's not a good thing at all. What I don't like also,
I was just going to follow that up and say, I think I share that. And I think it's important that we're not advocating to just sit there and take it in the teeth from an agency who's wronging you. That's not the message that I think either one of us are trying to say. But I think your message at the very beginning, which is how are you going to deal with pain and suffering that life throws at you? That's the real measure of a man. You know, that's the real measure of a human being and how you're going to live your life. And do you want to live a life of peace or chaos? You know, what do you want out of life? And living a life of peace is a lot of hard work. It's a lot of work.
It really is. And I remember a chief warrant officer taught me in the Marines. The Marines were complaining a lot, and he said, not one of you had a gun stuck to your head and made you, and someone forced you to sign that dotted line. All of you are here on your own will. Now, yes, it was a contract, and some people were like, I'm 2 years in, I got 4 years to go. But at the same time, when it comes to law enforcement, I get it. Some because of pay cuts, retirement packages, I get it. Yeah. It can be just harder to just walk away. But at that point, if you really can't leave, which most of the time people can, because there's opportunities out there. Think of all the millions upon millions of people who have had a very successful retirement without a police pension. But also, you have to focus on what you can control. Yeah. And I know it's said so much, but I feel like as you and I care about others, and we talk to other people like we're friends, and we'll have that hard conversation, but we'll also hold each other accountable in making sure you focus on what you can control. Because if you focus on what you can control, like your mindset and your health, then maybe the fact that you didn't get that new patrol car and the newer guy did won't affect you so much.
Right. Well, there's a reason why it said so much, is because people need to hear it a lot. So if I back up there, and thanks for letting me chase that rabbit hole a little bit. But if we back up there and kind of close this out, I'm going to close this out with a question to you. What do you feel like were some of the consequences of being involved in that? And I'm not just talking about leaving and coming back and groveling to get your job back, but the consequences of being involved in that toxic circle You know, give me a little bit of feedback on that, of the impact that that had on you, as maybe even as a person, not just a police officer, but as a human.
I mean, it was a lesson learned the hard way. So am I glad it happened? No, but I did take meaning from it and have implemented it, you know, forward in my life. But I missed out on, I mean, I left. It was just, I missed out on feeling that excitement the first year of working as a cop. I mean, that first year is when you're so excited. And I was being pulled into negativity. And then the 8 months I was gone, that's time I would have never got. I'll never get back at that police department that I never should have left in the first place.
Right.
So, yeah, I lost some opportunity there for sure.
Thanks for letting me chase that rabbit a little bit. Okay, so you come back mm-hmm. to the police department and things going better? Are they accepting you warmly, open arms? Or are they messing with you?
Yeah, no, they were. Yeah. They gave me a hard time, but I went with it. I earned it.
I deserve that.
But. Right, 100%. But no, I was put on an awesome patrol team in the busy district that I worked my first year, and I was so glad to be back in that district. And for 7 years or so working patrol, I did get canine a few years after coming back. I was just loving working the road overall. I really was.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when did you start having trouble again in your law enforcement career?
I did. It wasn't necessarily me getting in trouble, but it was in the sense of the relationship with my wife. We got married in 2010, and she knew that I really enjoyed law enforcement, and she was all right with it. She knew what she was getting into. But I got canine in 2013. Yeah, the dog and I got certified in May of 2013. I continued to just sign up for off-duty work, even though my wife was telling me, like, we don't need the cash. Why are you signing up? I was like, well, I mean, it's easy money. How can I say no to it? I really enjoyed being in the police uniform and working and keeping this one restaurant that I worked off duty at plenty of time. I mean, I enjoyed helping to keep it safe and enjoyed hanging out with the people there and stuff like that. And I was getting paid for it. You know, it was great. And then, you know, if I worked the car lots where I was patrolling the car lots, obviously stuff can happen there. And it was, so there was a purpose to that job, but hey, if a call was going on nearby and they needed more officers, you know I was going. So it was just, but it was starting to take a toll where she worked Monday through Friday and I would sign up for these gigs Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights. So I was useless on the weekend because I was groggy and sleepy in addition to working 2 weeks a day, two weeks a nights. But also, do you think mental health was taught to me and other officers during our career? No, absolutely not. So I would see these things going on calls, and I would say the typical three-word phrase, I am fine. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I thought, I'm going to church, I'm working out, I have friends outside of the profession, and I don't listen to my radio on my days off, I'm good. But little did I know, you have to work on your mental fitness just as much as you do your physical fitness. And if there's something bothering you, you better get, you really need to attend to it. All of that cumulatively had a compound effect in a way that my marriage was not working out, in the sense that we were drifting apart, particularly when our oldest son was born in 2015. And I felt more of a purpose and a passion towards continuing to work as a canine officer rather than being a dad. I'm not saying I wasn't never home. It's just when I was home,
you weren't present.
I was not present to him. I was physically there. He was cute. He was fun to be around, but I had stuff on my mind. And once again, couldn't settle down. Here come these post-traumatic stress symptoms again. In 2016, we're riding down the road and my wife's driving. I'm in the passenger seat. Our 1-year-old son is in the back seat. And she says, I'm thinking about doing all of this on my own. Now, and it hit me. I was like, oh shoot. I don't want to be another divorced cop, you know?
Wow.
And yeah, so I started to have, I had a decision to make. Do I stay on canine? What can I do to make this work? Because I was determined to make it work, like have canine and continue the work on the marriage. I think the damage was done. I started taking a lot more time off, but I was burning through my vacation hours, and she knew it was just a Band-Aid. So in late October, November, or early November of 2016, I can't remember exactly when, I put in my 2 weeks notice to resign from the police department and ultimately hand over the dog to someone else. It hurt. It hurt a lot. But I was very fortunate. They said, no, you don't have to resign. Like, you can resign from canine, but we'll put you in the schools. And I agreed to that. And my wife was like, yeah, that'll actually help us. But that was a tough time, because I know I'm sure on the show you've talked about the identity piece. Yeah. Oh man, big time. I was a canine officer. I didn't look at that as my job. That was me. And so to hand over the dog, which was sad enough as is, and then lose that job that I really enjoyed. Oh man, that was a tough one. That was.
Yeah. No, we talk, I like to start that framing with the idea of distorted loyalty. I talk a little bit about that, about how we've gotten so skewed on what our values are focused on, which is mostly to the job. And then, you know, you drill down on that, and that really goes to an ego talk, you know, an identity kind of conversation about where we place our focus and what our values are, specific to our identity, because that's so common in this community. We just give everything to it. You know, that is who I am, you know? And, I am a father, a husband, or a friend falls so far down, the chain, right? Is that fair? That, yeah.
Oh yeah. 100%. No, 100%. So I like to tell police officers and other first responders, even military, when you start to describe yourself going forward, watch your language, because if you you can say, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, but then say, I work as a police officer. I work as a first responder, because I mean, heck, you could be hurt the next shift and you can't do the job anymore. And I know plenty of people have gone through that, and it hits really hard. I'm not going to say you won't miss the career, but at least you know that you as a person, who you are, is way more important than what you do. And you can take that who you are and provide value for a lot of other people in many other ways outside of the profession.
Well, I'm really thankful that you shared that about your, let us take a peek in your home, because that's a big part of these conversations as well, because we, navigating that as a first responder or a veteran is really difficult. As well, of keeping that balance and throwing everything you have into the, and it takes anything you're willing to give, it's going to take it. It will accept it. And at the end of the career, it'll chew you up and spit you out and say, yeah, thanks. We gave you a paycheck, you know, goodbye.
Yeah, it really will. And to anyone who's listening, if you and your family are going through a hard time and you feel alone, to which I get it, you can feel like you're the only one going through stuff. It can feel bad. I was part of a documentary called Is There Something Going On at Home? It's only 45 minutes, but it has made an impact to those who have watched it, when it focuses on how when a police officer goes through trauma, it can bleed right into the family. And it focuses on the family, the police family, and it's been very helpful.
How would somebody find that?
You can go to lightningdigitalentertainment.com. I think I said the website correctly. Jason, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry if I misspoke it. But anyway, it's also on Amazon. Yeah. I don't make a dime from this. I just hoping to make an impact with it. But it is on Amazon, and it is affordable. Let's just put it that way. I don't even think it's more than $5. Yeah. watch it for sure.
So kind of catch us up now. So you go back to SRO and you're doing some work there, transition to, is that when you start transitioning to giving back to this community, start doing some public speaking? Is that when you're doing this?
I was working as an SRO. I felt lost for like the first year, cause I just was so attached to that canine role, but I did my best to show up for those kids. And I was shocked, Brad, to just see how much those kids had my heart. Like, I cared about the students so much, and I didn't bash the SROs personally. I bashed the job. Like, how difficult can it be to be an SRO? Boy, was I in for a rude awakening. That is one of the toughest jobs in law enforcement. If you put in the effort to be proactive right. with it. Oh my yeah. gosh. They had my heart. But I'll never forget, I'm working as an SRO. I think I'm at the alternative school at this point. I had to attend some mandatory training at the PD. And it was January of 2020, I believe. And they said, we're going to show you this video about mental health because way more cops in 2019 died by suicide than in the line of duty. I didn't know that that was the case at all. And all the years prior, no idea. I know it's nothing new, but it's like, I didn't know. And that set me off. I was like, wait a minute, you mean to tell me that the mental health conditions that I've gone through, the struggle I went through in my family, it's just like all these things, and a lot of cops are killing themselves and we don't get training on any of this. I said, I'm not gonna let this continue the way it has been going, where it's not really talked about. And that class, by the way, was only like an hour. Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, there's gotta be more to this. So I jumped in April of 2020. That's when I released my first book, Mental Health Fight of the Heroes in Blue. And I basically went over the essentials and the basics of mental health, and then how we can take care of ourselves in different ways than what we think have been working. Because seriously, if hanging out with people outside of the profession, not talking about the job on your days off, having hobbies outside of the profession, if those are working so well, then why are we seeing the numbers we're seeing? So we got to do more.
Right.
We got to do more. And I know you know this, but we do have to do more. So I dove into that as to other things we can do. And I wrote about that in the book. And at that point, I guess there was no turning back. Yeah. So I've been on the journey ever since.
Yeah. I frame it as we need to do better. I think as a law enforcement occupation as a whole, I think I'm not ignoring any of the other first responder lanes of traffic, you know, firefighter, paramedic, emergency room personnel, we can do better. But specific to firefighters, man, their suicide count is way, way too high.
It's so tragic.
Sorry, that framed out like there's an acceptable number. There is not an acceptable suicide number. Let me be clear.
Right. It's tragic.
You know, I think we can do better. And there's so many different areas where administratively and culturally, relationally, we can do a lot better.
We can. And I caution people not to wait on, say, that the leadership to get better, or the peer support program to be set up, or the chaplains to come in. No, I mean, take charge. And it's something as simple as taking charge of your day.
Yeah.
Wake up early enough to give yourself time to prime your mind so that you just don't go right into the chaos and your mind will just abuse you all day long. Train that sucker. You got to train it. And it's very crucial. And you won't feel the effects at first. You'll be like, this is stupid. Like, I'll bring it up. Meditation. Yeah, I said it. You know, it's like at first, if you do a guided meditation where you're focusing on what you're grateful for and you're doing some deep breathing, you're like, this is a freaking waste of time. And I know because I've been there. But all of a sudden, weeks, months down the road, I'm noticing I'm a lot more calm in certain situations, and I'm creating more of a vision for the future rather than letting the past hold me back so much. So stuff like that.
We refer to it on here as hippie shit. But it works. It's you're 100% right. It works. And it just really is. It's a pride thing. It's a pride and the ego thing. You look at, or maybe an unknown, like, I don't know what that is. It's just hippie shit and it works. But I want to point out something you said a while ago, which is we have if you have an opportunity, you should do something. I argue that we have an obligation. If you're in this community, you have an obligation to step forward. If you don't have a peer team, do something, you know,
Good point.
Admiral William McRaven, who has that great, commencement speech down at the University of Texas. He wrote a book called Wisdom of the Bullfrog, and in the book he talks about this concept of courageous leadership is seeing where something needs to be done and actually doing it, stepping into that space. That's a duty. That's a courageous moment of just saying. And so I just want to drill down a minute on this. Is a really important point that you're making for people out here who may not have a peer support team or may not have a go-to therapist. The reality is they have connections through you or me or other people that we've had on this podcast to say, hey, call me. If you need something, give me a call. I'd be happy to either help you or steer you in the right direction or connect you with people who know what's going on. But in this space of suicide, it's not an excuse to sit on the sidelines and say, you know, I wish we had this, or, you know, that starts to divert us to this victim mentality that you spoke to of, you know, I'm helpless over here.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. 100%. And I totally disagree with the saying that I've heard mentioned on, I was watching a YouTube video one time. This thing had tons of views, and some guy was on a podcast, a very famous one. And he said, suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And I was like, oh no, that's incorrect. Oh, that is so incorrect. It's not a solution to anything.
Right.
And problems are temporary. Correct. But no, we're not. I hate that permanent solution. No, it's the only time suicide and solution should be in the same sentence is someone is saying suicide is not a solution.
Right. Very much so. Well, Scott, this has been awesome, man. If we kind of wrapping this up, is there anything that you kind of want to tell our listeners to key in on, maybe thematically, a message that you want to leave, two, three, maybe points about how to live out their careers and health and harmony?
Yeah, absolutely. Just the main thing is keep showing up for you the same way you'll show up for other people. Because when you do show up for yourself in the form of strengthening your body, strengthening your mind, strengthening your spiritual life, your social life, when you show up for you and you make the time, you can show up that much better for other people. And that isn't that the point? Right, that's what you signed up for, to help others. And guess what? When the career is over, to which it will be one day, take that servant's heart and go out there and make an impact. Is it going to be easy? No, trust me. I know it's not easy. But when you believe in something and doing something that's higher than yourself, you'll keep going. And you're not alone. You've got me, you've got Brad, you got so many other people. It takes a village. There is a village. So when you need some assistance, I mean, heck, I reach out to people. It's fine. We are not meant to go through this alone, like the title of your podcast, No One Fights Alone, but also people need people. Just make sure you seek out the right people. And that's my message. Keep showing up for sure.
Such great messaging. Give us a little, give me a little commercial on your presentations, on your talk. What's the kind of the themology of this? Is your minute to kind of sell. If somebody want to holler at you, what are they looking at? What are you giving them?
Oh, well, I appreciate that, Brad. Yeah, the whole purpose of the 10 Code Mindset is to basically, I prove to the first responders, particularly the police officers, that you are human.
Yeah.
And you can be affected, and I am fine. We'll only take you so far. But after you acknowledge you're human, then you have to raise your awareness of how you really are doing and be honest with yourself, and you need to take action. Like, nothing changes for you unless you take action. And you can't wait for someone else to take the action for you. Even if they did, guess what? You have to make the decision to act upon whatever advice they're giving. But the 10 Code Mindset is also giving steps on how to implement mental fitness exercises and tips and mentality and shaping your mentality so that you don't go through life and career in survival mode. Sure. I'm not saying there won't be hard times, but you'll always be able to continuously get up and seek to prevail against them and find meaning to the struggle. You know, you can say, you know what, this is going to make me stronger and I'm going to come out on the other end of it no matter what. And also just think about the future rather than let the past hold you back so much. And it also, we even focus on language, like phrases. I'll be happy when you say stuff like I am not, or I should do this rather than I have to do this. And then also things like I am not, well, I could have easily said in 2020, I am not an author, but now I am, because I just didn't want to settle for that bad, negative, self-doubting language. So stuff like that. Keep working, keep showing up. And if anyone's interested in getting in touch with me, you can find me at thescottmedlin.com or look up the podcast or YouTube channel, the 10 Code Mindset.
I love it. I love it. Scott, my friend, thank you for coming on. This has been a great conversation on some really hard stuff. So I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day.
It's been an honor, Brad. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's First Responder Resiliency Program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. It addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.